I'm Eric Allen for KLCC. Grammy-winning trumpeter Chris Botti returns to the Willamette Valley with a performance at the Holt Center in Eugene on May 1st, not far from where he grew up in Corvallis. His career has taken him to worldwide success in the contemporary jazz world, as well as on tours with vocalists ranging from Paul Simon and Sting to Frank Sinatra. His most recent CD, Impressions, features romantic melodies and global collaborations with such diverse luminaries as Herbie Hancock, Mark Knopfler, and Andrea Bocelli. He joins us at KLCC by phone. Thanks for taking a few minutes, Chris.
It's nice to be with you. How are you doing, okay?
Good. Well, it's
all right.
It's
nice to hear Willamette pronounced the right way.
You've been hearing some Willamette out there in the world?
Well, that's all you hear once you get outside of the borders of Oregon, you know. It's just Oregon and the Willamette Valley, you know.
Well, what's it like to come back to the Willamette Valley for you when you perform here after all the roots that you have?
It's very, very fun for me. It's kind of emotional, you know, to come back, especially that whole, you know, Eugene, Corvallis area that I grew up in, I grew up in Corvallis, but I mean, they're so close and so intertwined, you know, with so much history and I step off the plane in Oregon, and I just feels, you know, the air and the beauty and stuff. It feels real nostalgic, I guess is the correct word.
What was the musical climate like for you growing up in Corvallis? How did that send you on this amazing path that you've traveled?
Well, I mean, maybe when I look back on it now, I think the cool thing about growing up in Corvallis then is that nothing was going on. in a way that it inspired you to practice and gave you time to do that. You know, if I would have grown up in New York City or something like that, I might have had my concentration diverted a little bit. But there was, in both Eugene, and I don't know what the scene is like now, but in Eugene and Portland, there was really kind of an up-and-coming jazz, not only music program in the University of Oregon, but with local professional musicians that were fantastic, you know, kind of, really, really, really A-class jazz musicians. So I would drive up to Portland and play in the jazz clubs all night when I was like 16 and 17. I got in, you know, into all the bars because I was a performer. And I would go to Eugene and play and play with some of the guys in the University of Oregon music programs down there and go to camps and stuff. It was great.
Since then, your path has been such an eclectic one, and even the new CD, Impressions, is quite an eclectic piece. What kind of a vision did you have when you started out to make Impressions?
I think it's probably more than anything 13 different ways to treat a ballad. You know, it's all very lush and beautiful with orchestra, and I'm really lucky to have a record company, Columbia Records, that allows me to do what I want. I mean, they're not cheap records to make, to stand in front of the London Symphony and turn on the recording devices with 80 people in a historic studio. So I just really think that it's been a fun ride for me, and the record is supposed to kind of make everyone, you know, you can either listen to it and dive into it, or you can have it on and just kind of mill around the house, you know. But the collaborations I'm very, very proud of with Knopfler and Bocelli and Foster and Herbie Hancock and Vince Gill.
Mark Knopfler doesn't tend to sing other people's songs very often, the brilliant songwriter that he is. How did you manage to convince him to break that mold?
I didn't. My manager, who's the leader of a former drummer and leader of a band called Blood, Sweat, and Tears, is a big kind of rock band. He and Knopfler have been friends over the years, and my manager was in Hyde Park in London with him, and Knopfler said to my manager, you know, Chris should record It's a Wonderful World. And my manager, Bobby, rang me and said, that's what Mark said. I said, well, you know, I don't think I'd maybe want to do that because of it's such sacred ground, because Louis Armstrong did such a great job of it. But I said, if Mark would sing it, maybe we got something going here, you know. And we went back to Mark. He said, I would love to do that, as long as we agreed to go to London and use his musicians. So what you're hearing is it's all done in one take. Everything, the vocal, the trumpet, the band, everything's done in one complete take. There's no edits. It's just boom. So you're hearing the guitar solo and the trading and everything. And that's very unique in this day and age with kind of like, you know, sophisticated music, that you do it all in one take like that with a whole bunch of musicians. So it was really fun for me to do that.
And it takes stellar musicians to be able to pull that off.
It takes stellar musicians to make something really simple sound, what's the right word, not amateurish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, Mark uses some incredible musicians from Nashville, a lot of them, and it's the sign of a really, really great drummer and a bass player and a piano player, a guitar player, etc., when they play something very, very simple and tasteful, and it doesn't sound raw, or not raw, it doesn't sound amateurish, is the best way I can come up. It sounds sophisticated and beautiful, and that comes from years and years and years of practice. And so the song has a certain amount of restraint, which makes it that thing, and that's just from all these world-class musicians just kind of like playing very simply and beautifully.
There's another musician who appears quite frequently on this CD, which is Brazilian guitarist Leonardo Amoedo. What is it about his playing that made you choose to use him so much?
He's just first of all, he has one of the most beautiful touches on the guitar. Meeting him and working with him is something that we really recognized early on was going to make the record tilt in a certain way. That, for lack of a better word, Brazilian-Spanish acoustic guitar thing. Maybe outside of Pat Metheny, I've heard few guitar players that have the same kind of content and expertise on their instrument. He's going to be making his very first trip to Eugene with us when we play in Eugene, and so he's going to be in the band as a featured artist as well. He's just beautiful and emotional player, and he was nice enough to get on an airplane and come from Brazil and work with us, and now he's on tour with us, and so we're happy about that.
Who else will be in the touring band with you?
We have a great concert violinist named Serena McKinney. And a singer named Cy Smith, who appeared on our Live in Boston DVD, and then another singer named George Komsky, who's kind of an Andrea Bocelli-ish sort of singer, and then our incredible rhythm section from Live in Boston, and Jeffrey Keyser kind of holding it down on the piano as the star of the rhythm section, along with Billy Gilson.
Jeffrey Keyser is a remarkable player in the jazz world, and like Herbie Hancock and like you as well, has one foot in the jazz world, but also beyond in terms of arrangements and style, very, very unusual in being able to play uncompromised music in a way that transcends some of those boundaries. I would imagine that you feel a certain kinship musically with both Herbie Hancock and Jeffrey Keyser.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. I stand on stage every night and look at Jeffrey and kind of go, I've never seen anyone. I mean, you know, you have your names like a Herbie Hancock or Brad Meldow or Bill Evans, obviously, when he's alive. But those iconic people, you know, and I'd put Jeffrey in there with someone that I've never witnessed have the kind of prowess he has on the piano. And it's very, very cool to watch. He has kind of unlimited facility on both hands, because most jazz piano players comp with their left hand and kind of like solo with their right hand. But he has completely two sets of his body that are equally as fluid. And so he's going kind of all this mishmash of sometimes it's classical based and sometimes it's obviously jazz. And it's just jaw-droppingly incredible to watch every night. I have so much fun standing on the side of the stage watching some of my funnest parts of the show for me. You know?
You've gotten to play with such incredible people over the years. I know there was a long collaboration with Paul Simon, and Sting was influential, but Frank Sinatra, as a young man playing with Frank Sinatra, what did you learn from that incredible experience?
Well, it wasn't long. It was 2 weeks in Los Angeles at the debut of an album of his called L.A. Is My Lady. But more importantly, I dropped out of college. This isn't the best message for kids, but the truth is I dropped out of college the night before. I mean, I got the call to see if I wanted to do the Sinatra thing, subbing for someone for this couple weeks. And I just thought it was such a interesting, great opportunity for me to say, okay, well, I've done my time in college. And in music, you know, you're either going to do it or you're not. If you want to teach music or get a degree, that's an incredibly great thing, and you need the structure of college. But if you're going to be a performer, there are things that are probably a little bit more powerful. The draw to a city like New York, the draw to play with somebody like Sinatra, and also your desire to want to get on the road and perform. And so I really use that as a launching pad and did that Sinatra gig, and to watch him walk out on stage and see that iconic presence. This was 1984, so he was still, you know, well within his incredible talent scope, you know. And it was great. And then also look out in the audience and see Quincy Jones and, you know, Angie Dickinson back in the day, and, you know, all those great movie stars and performers and producers like Quincy and Nelson Riddle Orchestra. And it was a big thrill for a 21-year-old kid to be sitting there.
I can only imagine. The world has changed a lot since then in the music world and the jazz world and smooth jazz world. And it seems to affect everyone that I know in the music world in terms of how they approach their careers and their music. How is it all shifting for you in 2014?
It's shifting as during the course of this interview too. I mean, the record business, probably more than any other entertainment venue, has really got to find its footing. For an artist like me, oddly enough, it's really benefited in the sense that there is become more than any time right now an avenue for people that perform live. You know, you can have a one-hit wonder, you can have a video that people gravitate towards, or a rap song or whatever, but that's not lasting. The artists that still sell concert tickets today, Elton or Bonnie Raitt or whomever it is, you know, their performance is based on them being able to perform live. And that's really, really helped me. I'm an artist that doesn't really necessarily have a hit song that defines them, and yet I can sell concert tickets all over the world. That's kind of like word of mouth, and it's word of mouth about having a great show and a great band, and it's entertaining. And then that seeps out through the adult things of just literally word of mouth. And so I feel so very, very fortunate to have been able to get an audience by the time, I mean, it really started to go south about 2010, 2009, 2010. So now this next generation of kids coming out, I don't really know what the answer is, and I don't know what the solution is going to be for the record business and the way that music business is. All I know is that I got my trumpet and we got a band and we're here to play, and that seems to right now be resonating with people.
To be an artist whose career is based on artist and not on a particular song seems like a much more stable path, and so you are both blessed and you've worked hard to achieve it, so congratulations, and may it be a long productive road still ahead of you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that sentiment.
Trumpeter Chris Bode, who will return to his Oregon roots with a performance at the Holt Center in Eugene on Thursday, May 1st, presented by the John G. Shedd Institute for the Arts. Chris Bode is touring behind his latest CD, Impressions, which features a diverse variety of collaborations and styles. For tickets and more information, theshedd.org or the Holt Center box office. For more on Chris Bode, chrisbode.com. Chris, thank you so much for taking time today.
Thank you, and I'll see you in Eugene. Thanks a lot.
For KLCC, bye-bye. I'm Eric Allen. Thanks, Chris.